Final paper is by Faye Bartram. She did her graduate work at the University of Iowa and wrote her dissertation on Franco-Soviet diplomacy and film exchange in post-war Europe. And she is currently a visiting assistant professor at the University of Iowa.
Thank you for that. So, as Christine Grant has shown, France and Russia have had a bond dating back hundreds of years, at least as early as Peter the Great in the 17th century. However, after World War II, the relationship instead resembled an argument between two longtime friends, standing back to back, arms crossed, and giving each other the silent treatment. Few official discussions took place between France and the Soviet governments, between the French and Soviet governments, between 1945 and 1956. Cold War tensions and general distrust kept the French and Soviet authorities from maintaining an official, cultural, and for the most part political, relationship in the decade following World War II. While little state-to-state interaction took place, a transnational friendship society named Association France-URSS was largely responsible for generating and facilitating cultural exchange and networking between France and the Soviet Union from 1945 until 1956, when the French government, for the most part, appropriated the process. Then cast to the margins, the Association France-URSS began working extensively with its newly formed Soviet counterpart, the USSR France Friendship Society. With a nod towards Tyler Stovall's work, Transnational France, this paper looks at transnational relationships to better understand the French nation. In this case, as it stood at the intersection of the Cold War, Soviet foreign policy, the French state's efforts to quell domestic communist elements, and the work of various non-governmental groups. Excuse me. This paper also adds to the burgeoning transnational scholarship on the Soviet Union. There has been considerable headway in the investigations of World War II, anti-nuclear movements, and the human rights activism, but it's a little trickier to shed the Soviet state when considering cultural production and international exchange especially, as the government was inevitably part of the process. So, with this in mind, this paper takes an inquisitive look at the work, the function, and the role of two transnational groups, the Association France-URSS, which I will call the AFU, and the USSR France Friendship Society, which I will be calling the UF. These transnational entities occupied the space between the individual and the state and worked to develop mutual understanding between the two societies through cultural exchange and by promoting the other's culture, values, and language in the other's nation. In this way, the AFU succeeded with flying colors. In building an extensive network of contacts in the USSR and in disseminating Soviet culture in France between 1945 and 1956, I argue that the AFU, the Association France-URSS, laid the groundwork for and revitalized Franco-Soviet cultural exchange and inspired French administrators to improve diplomatic interaction with the USSR. See, by 1956, the AFU's success had caught the attention of the French state, which then felt compelled to resume official cultural relations with the USSR as a way to quell the AFU's domestic influence and level of communication with what the French administrators considered a highly suspect political power. This, in turn, ameliorated Franco-Soviet political relations when the French state decided to form a bilateral organization with the sole purpose of negotiating and controlling the flow of cultural exchange. Additionally, I argue that the creation of the UF, the Soviet counterpart, in 1956 served the goals of both the AFU and the Soviet administration. So, for the AFU, working with another transnational group helped combat marginalization in Franco-Soviet relations. As for the USSR, the UF was a part of a larger Soviet cultural policy. In this way, the Soviet administration still had an access route into the general French public, especially in light of the diminishing influence of and considerable loss of membership for the French Communist Party in 1956. This project also complicates the transnational lens. Can we use this term when speaking about Soviet cultural history, as the state was necessarily involved in all cultural matters? The same question actually applies in the examination of the AFU and the UF, as membership for both groups were comprised of state officials and private citizens. So, one reason the AFU was successful in generating cross-cultural exchange after 1945 was because in the wake of World War II, Franco-Soviet relations rapidly soured due to developing Cold War tensions, differing answers to the German question, the implications of the Marshall Plan, Soviet support for French Indochina's independence, and the dismissal of the French Communist Party from and its ministers from the Paul Ramadier administration in May 1947. Ministerial correspondence shows that until about the mid-1950s, there was not very much state-to-state interaction between France and the USSR. What little they did talk about concerned POWs, the repayment of wartime debt, and military cemeteries on the other's territory. Notwithstanding, as a transnational body, the AFU generated a steady stream of cultural products between the two states, especially between 1945 and 1956. As its name suggests, the AFU aimed to create cross-cultural interaction and exchange with, quote, the ultimate goal of improving mutual understanding between the two societies, end quote. Even though a majority of the AFU's leaders and members were card-carrying communists or socialists, the group was officially registered as a private organization under the July 1901 Law on Associations, and thus worked through non-political channels, chiefly culture. The AFU was established in 1945, but traces its origins to 1905, when socialist intellectuals such as Jean Jaurès founded the Friendship Society of Russian and Annexed Peoples. As you might imagine, there was a name change after the Bolshevik Revolution in 1917, and multiple name changes until it was reformed on French soil in 1945 after World War II, with the name Association France-URSS. Most of its founding members were left-leaning intellectuals and communists. Over the years, the AFU Presidium has boasted multiple well-known people, such as filmmakers Louis Decon, Guy Desson, and Jean Dreville. The latter, Jean Dreville, who directed two of the four film co-productions made between France and the Soviet Union between 1945 and 1972. As well as actress Marina Vladi, who starred in the other two co-productions. There was also Jacques Duclos, head of the French Communist Party at the same time as being a president in the AFU, and intellectuals such as Jean-Paul Sartre and Louis Aragon. So, the AFU offered multiplicity of events. It hosted exhibitions on Soviet culture and art, lecture series, film screenings, literature readings, and musical and dance performances. All activities that welcomed over 3.8 million attendees between 1945 and 1955. The group also circulated pamphlets, brochures, bi-monthly magazine that featured articles on the AFU itself, as well as Soviet life, culture, history, events, sometimes translations of articles from Soviet newspapers, plus advertisements for Soviet frippery, stamps, and voyages. Each AFU regional headquarters offered Russian translation services, a library, a bookstore, hosted Russian language classes, and the Center of Operations in Paris also offered a cinematheque. The AFU's cinema events especially drew large numbers. For example, in 1950, the AFU offered close to 1,000 screenings in 58 departments with over 300,000 spectators in audience. Meanwhile, the Centre National de la Cinématographie, or the CNC, reported close to 200,000 tickets were sold for Soviet films that year. That means that at least in 1950, the AFU drew more spectators to its screenings than did commercial theaters. Bringing together the two societies across the Iron Curtain, the AFU coordinated junkets, receptions, congresses in France, and sponsored tourist trips and exchange programs, and of course even hosted delegations of Soviet comrades. Science, literature, films, and music was shared between France and the USSR by means of the AFU and, after 1956, by dint of both transnational groups. Each year, the AFU would send multiple delegations and leaders to Moscow and other major Soviet cities. While in the USSR, the AFU also did things. It would host exhibitions on French art, classes on the French language or French history, and receptions featuring French music, literature, and cinema. Because the USSR's embassy in Paris was its chief source of information on Soviet culture and society, the group worked closely with officials from the USSR, who also would frequent their events. The AFU may have done much of its work through transnational channels, but it had a much larger impact on the nation. So in an attempt to curb AFU activities, marginalize the group, limit its interaction with the USSR, and gain complete control of cultural exchange, the French administration decided to reestablish official cultural relations and improve diplomatic interaction by establishing the Franco-Soviet Permanent Mixed Commission, or what I will call a commission mixed, in 1957. The bilateral body whose sole purpose was to negotiate and control cultural trade and exchange between the two states. Therefore, the AFU not only built the foundation of cross-cultural exchange between France and the Soviet Union, as I just discussed, but it also played a large role in promoting the restoration of official Franco-Soviet relations. The French state had distrusted the AFU and its predecessors for decades. French officials suspected it had a strong relationship with the French and Soviet Communist parties, as well as the close work the AFU did with the Soviet Union and the various embassies. Therefore, in the eyes of the French administrators, the AFU was vulnerable to manipulation from Moscow and was considered a transmission belt. For these reasons, the French state, in all of its post-45 forms, utilized its local, regional, and international officials to keep a watchful eye on the group and transmit information to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. To save time, I won't go into more details, but it's very interesting stuff. All of this would help the French administration limit the AFU's activities and steer exchange towards official channels after 1956 by way of the Commission Mixed. In fact, marginalizing the AFU was one of the French state's motivating factors for establishing the Commission Mixed in the first place. Sort of found a smoking gun in the archives. So, in a confidential communique, Ambassador to the USSR Maurice Dijon suggested that It has become difficult to limit the activities of the AFU. The plan to create a commission mix with the USSR must be hurried. This will facilitate our control of all exchange, end quote. Next, a series of reactions and different strategic defensive moves against one another caused a chain reaction, the interplay of which ultimately shaped both the French state's and the AFU's domestic policies, as well as how it interacted with the USSR. Also, to save time, I'll just quickly describe it. So we have the creation of the commission mix, and then at that point, the state disassociated itself from the AFU and barred its diplomats and representatives from participating in the AFU or its events. And in response to that, the AFU changed its leadership, opened up the leadership to non-communist and non-socialist, to non-aligned people, Gaullists, centrists, all over the place. So they opened up their leadership in response to that. And as well, to get a wider audience, they increased the number of public events. In reaction to the increased public events, the French consulate was instructed to deny travel visas to the AFU's Soviet guests, pretty much almost all of them over the years, which of course disrupted a number of activities. So in response, in order to combat the French state's forced marginalization, the AFU decided it would work more closely with its transnational Soviet counterpart, the USSR-France Friendship Society, or what I will call the UF, which was created in 1956. So like the AFU, the UF offered many of the same activities in the USSR and was also labeled a private association. Although its original precursor was a subcommittee of something called VOKS, a branch of the Soviet Ministry of Culture. So the UF's precursor was a part of the Soviet organ. The UF's first presidents were famous writer Ilya Ehrenberg and celebrated filmmaker Sergei Yudkevich, legitimizing the group's cultural character. The central leadership, however, was generally called from political and scholastic academies, and specialized artistic state unions. The UF was divided into three departments: teaching and cultural questions, pedagogy and science, and then relations with French organizations. Later, as interaction grew and new needs arose, other divisions were added, such as tourism in 1958, youth in 1963, and women's issues in 1965. So the UF's growing number of departments actually developed as a consequence of the AFU's response to the French state's policy of denying visas to its guests. So, as a countermove to the denial of visas, the AFU established a tourism and travel section that sent French people to the USSR. If the French state would deny the group's Soviet visitors, then the AFU would fly French people over the Iron Curtain. So in conjunction with the UF, Aeroflot Airlines, and a visa organization called Intourist, the AFU organized tourist visits to and student exchanges in Moscow, St. Petersburg, Kiev, and other major cities. Later in 1962, the travel sector added four more types of tours. So now we have got popular, classic, camping and auto, and youth. Between 1965 and 1969, the travel sector sent a little over 25,000 French people on these voyages. As the French state continued to deny visas well into the 1960s, the group increasingly hosted events in the USSR instead of France, especially large events such as annual conferences and congresses, which ultimately brought even more French people to the USSR. So through its work with the UF and by multiplying its events in the USSR, the AFU continued to develop contacts, bolster exchange, and strengthen Franco-Soviet relations on its own terms, despite the French state's efforts to marginalize the group. From 1956 onwards, the AFU and UF leaders met multiple times a year, actually, in Moscow to conjointly plan both groups' annual activities and conferences. This led to the signing of an exchange agreement called the Cultural Accord for Cooperation between the AFU and the UF in 1963. The agreement, of course, emphasized cross-cultural exchange, developing tourism, and information sharing, which consequently carved out a permanent place in Franco-Soviet cultural exchange and relations for both the AFU and the UF. While the commission mixed work did take much exchange out of the AFU's hands, the group's work with the UF allowed it to nevertheless play an important role. In the face of declining membership figures, magazine subscriptions, and popularity with the French public since 1956, the AFU was able to bypass the French state's restrictions and countermeasures by way of its liaisons with the UF. The AFU's relationship with the UF and the 1963 Cultural Accord also played a part in one of the Soviet administration's cultural policies. So since 1927, the USSR had been establishing friendship societies in other nations on both sides of the Iron Curtain. And by 1957, there were 47 of these friendship societies. Upholding the French state's efforts to constrain the AFU, representatives at a 1961 commission mixed meeting adamantly rejected their Soviet counterpart's suggestion to, quote, allow unlimited cultural exchange with non-governmental groups such as the AFU, unquote. So that was denied. And then coincidentally, a few months later, the AFU and the UF began discussing the terms of what became the 1963 cultural accord that carved out that permanent position for them. Turns out this is also part of Soviet policy. So according to a confidential report on a NATO meeting in 1963, Ambassador to the USSR Roger Seydoux stated that in many other, quote, in many other Western nations, as well as France, the Soviets have given privileged role to non-governmental pro-communist groups, such as the AFU, and have created cultural accords between these entities. The Soviets did the same thing in Norway, Italy, Denmark, and Great Britain, unquote. So, while the AFU worked through transnational avenues to conduct its business simultaneously, the group worked fit into larger Soviet cultural foreign policy. So, in the end, the AFU not only built the foundation for cross-cultural exchange between France and the USSR after World War II, it also played a large role in the reestablishment of Franco-Soviet cultural relations and the amelioration of political interaction, in that the group triggered the French administration to establish the Commission Mixte. Nevertheless, the Commission Mixte did appropriate the majority of cultural exchange between France and the Soviet Union from 1956 onwards. By 1963, Maurice Dejean declared the state's efforts triumphant. So, quote, the Commission Mixte has allowed the French government to exercise the necessary control over cultural exchange between the two countries that we have worked towards since 1956, end quote. Correspondingly, the AFU's records reveal decreasing participation in the group's cultural activities. So, while the French government's regulations were fairly successful on French soil, the AFU was able to circumvent state restrictions through the UF's domestic work and co-hosting events in the USSR, which necessarily then involved the French embassy and French diplomats in Moscow. Through transnational channels, the AFU was able to survive marginalization, expand its reach and activities, and bring elements of French and Soviet society together. While both the AFU and the UF operated along transnational lines, there were certain aspects that make us question if either of these were truly transnational in character. The AFU, for example, had direct ties to both the French and Soviet governments. At various times, French diplomats peppered the AFU's membership and presidium. For example, there was Maurice Schumann, the French ambassador in Moscow from 1969 through 73, that was one of the AFU's founding presidents. From 1965 through 1973, André Blumel functioned as the face of the AFU at the same time that he worked in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs on Franco-Israeli relations and Franco-German cultural exchange. Then there was Maurice Dejean, who served as president in the early 1970s of the AFU and had been ambassador to Czechoslovakia from 1945 to 1949 and then ambassador to the USSR from 1955 to 64. As well, there was a minister of information during George Pompidou's presidency, Leo Hamon, who acted as president for years of the AFU. Moreover, the group received funding from both the French and Soviet states. The AFU received small subsidies from the French government to organize cultural events. However, this was only a minor contribution. The AFU was primarily financed through private avenues. I say primarily because beginning October 1956, just 8 months after the UF's formation, the AFU began accepting direct payments from both the UF and VOKS, that organ of the Soviet Ministry of Culture. This begs the question, if we can use the transnational lens in our examination of Soviet cultural history, as the state was necessarily involved in all cultural and international matters. As for the UF, it clearly harbored deep connections with the Soviet administration. In a 1998 interview, former UF President V. Svitunov explained that, quote, the UF worked with all Soviet institutions. There was a unity of action between us, the leadership, and the Central Committee of the Communist Party, the Union of Writers, the Union of Painters, and the Union of Filmmakers. The Central Committee and the administration participated in the UF's work to inform Soviet citizens about France and inform French people about the Soviet Union. Our goal never changed, bettering the friendship between the two societies, end quote. So, while the UF obviously had clear ties to the Soviet government, to be fair, if someone was employed at all in the USSR, he or she necessarily worked for the state. It would have been impossible for any UF member to not have been a government employee. Therefore, we must consider the possibility that those who worked for the state in either the AFU or the UF were acting as private individuals when working in these groups. Much of the members of these groups were Russophiles or Francophiles, respectively. For example, Maurice Schumann had a long-time fascination with Russia and even married a Soviet ballerina. While Soviet filmmaker Sergei Yudkevich not only spoke French beautifully, often vacationed in France and also made multiple films about France and French history. This line of questioning makes for great fodder for a future research project, delving into the archives and trying to locate personal papers and correspondence and all. But for now, we stand at where the AFU, a non-governmental group, generated cultural exchange, prompted official cultural relations, inspired the French state to improve diplomatic communication, and finally found alternative transnational ways to avoid marginalization. Thank you.